This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, November 16, 2004, at WBAI in New York. I'm Deepa Fernandes. President Bush announces the nomination of Condoleezza Rice as Secretary of State to replace Colin Powell. Horror stories coming out of Fallujah. And a graduation ceremony takes place for elementary and junior high students in Guatemala. These young people, however, are inmates on the country's controversial death row. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Peace must be imposed on the Ivory Coast, according to the French foreign minister, if the people of the Ivory Coast are unable to stop hostilities. Yesterday, the United Nations Security Council unanimously approved an arms embargo over the African nation. France, the former colonizer, presented that proposal. Officials with the Gbagbo government immediately condemned the vote and said they were unable to present their perspective on the situation to the council. However, rebel forces now controlling the north are pleased with the decision. According to UN sources in the Ivory Coast, that a planned government military offensive was scrapped after French forces decimated the Ivory Coast's air force. The official said, however, that in the Ivory Coast, the French have no friends, only business interests. Over 2,000 former U.S. soldiers are resisting a call-up by the U.S. Army, according to a report by the New York Times. Katie Murray has more from D.C.
This group, unlike reservists and National Guard members, does not receive paychecks or train on weekends. Many of these soldiers claim they are not prepared for active duty and object to being sent to Iraq and Afghanistan after being under the impression that they had completed the active duty part of their Army service. Army spokeswoman Lieutenant Colonel Pamela Hart said that all soldiers have been trained and would be prepared for deployment. Hart said the most frequent reasons for soldiers objecting to deploy for active duty are medical reasons, family care problems such as being a single parent, financial hardships, business community hardships, or continuing education. GI Rights Coordinator for the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectives, Steve Morris, compared the calling up of the reserves to a backdoor draft.
There are many kinds of backdoor drafts. One is just the whole business of calling up the reserves and the National Guard. You know, the National Guard expected maybe to take care of floods.
For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Katie Murray.
Three Kosovar Albanians went on trial at the International War Crimes Tribunal. They are the first ethnic Albanians to be tried for alleged war crimes committed during the 1998-99 conflict. Malik Karamian reports from Pristina.
The three former members of the Kosovo Liberation Army, or KLA, are accused of murder, torture, and imprisonment of some 35 Serb civilians and ethnic Albanians in 1998. According to the indictment, at least 14 Kosovo Serbs were murdered at a KLA prison camp in eastern Kosovo before Serbian security forces took control of the region. An additional 10 Kosovar Albanians were executed for being, quote, Serb collaborators a short time later. Some critics of The Hague see the indictments as a counter to charges of anti-Serb bias for not bringing more Kosovo Albanians to trial for war crimes. Chief prosecutor at The Hague, Carla Del Ponte, is said to be handing down a new indictment against former KLA leaders before the end of the year. One former KLA commander, Ramush Haradinaj, a potential candidate for prime minister, is rumored to be on The Hague's most wanted list. Reporting from Kosovo for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Malik Karamian of the Kosovo Radio Collective.
An indefinite nationwide strike in Nigeria, scheduled to start today, has been suspended. Sam Olukoya explains from Lagos.
Nigerian workers have in the past 2 years organized a series of strikes to protest increase in fuel prices. But ahead of the latest plant strike, the government secured a court order barring them from going on strike. The workers say they decided to suspend the plant strike on legal advice. They, however, say they are going on appeal to try to convince the judges that it is the responsibility of the courts to protect such civil liberties. They are still determined to embark on a strike that will shut down Nigeria's oil export if the government does not bring down fuel prices. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
A former Boeing executive admitted in federal court that he hired a top Pentagon official while the two of them were negotiating a government contract. Leanne Caldwell has the story from WBAI.
In a 15-page court statement signed by Boeing executive Michael Sears, it stated that he met and hired top Pentagon official Darlene Dyron. At that time, she was managing more than $23 billion in contract negotiations between the Pentagon and Boeing for fuel tankers. Sears pleaded guilty to a felony charge of aiding and abetting an illegal hire. The admission offers further evidence of the close ties between the government and the contractors they hire. But the defense said this is just an isolated event and is not common practice. Last month, Dyron was sentenced to 9 months in prison. She admitted to price inflating and also helped to get her daughter a job at Boeing while she still worked at the Pentagon. The contract between Boeing and the Pentagon has since been nullified. For Free Speech Radio News in New York, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
A cameraman with NBC has captured on tape a U.S. Marine shooting dead an unarmed and wounded Iraqi prisoner in a mosque in Fallujah. The Marine is heard on tape claiming the wounded Iraqi man was faking his death. A Marine can be heard saying, "He's faking, he's dead, he's faking, he's dead." NBC's Kevin Seitz, who shot the footage, said the Iraqi man who was killed was one of five Iraqis who'd been injured after the U.S. raided the mosque in Fallujah, where 10 other Iraqis had already been killed. After exclaiming the man was faking his death, the Marine raises his rifle and shoots the man in the head. We go now to that sound from NBC. The U.S. military says they're investigating the shooting, which human rights groups have called a war crime. Meanwhile, we go to our correspondents in Baghdad, Salam Talib and Dar Jamil, who report that those fleeing Fallujah have horrific stories to tell.
As the Iraqi Red Crescent convoy of relief supplies is refused entry by the U.S. military, the humanitarian disaster for civilians trapped inside Fallujah worsens by the day. While the U.S. military now claims to be in control of the entire city, at the same time they report launching more airstrikes as well as pounding locations there with heavy artillery. A high-ranking official for the Red Cross in Baghdad today announced that his organization estimates that at least 800 civilians have been killed in Fallujah, where upwards of 50,000 residents remain. A television cameraman is caught on film, a U.S. Marine executing an elderly wounded Iraqi man in a mosque, after acknowledging that the man was still breathing. But this may only be the tip of the iceberg of the atrocities in Fallujah. Residents in Fallujah are reporting the use of cluster bombs and mass executions by soldiers in their city. On what is now the eighth day of the siege, as they begin to arrive in Baghdad, refugees from Fallujah are telling stories of atrocities committed by the U.S. military. At a busy supply center here, where refugees from Fallujah arrive to obtain relief supplies, Qasim Mohammed Ahmed, who just escaped from Fallujah 3 days ago.
They kicked all the journalists out of Fallujah so they could do whatever they want. The first thing they did is they bombed the hospitals because that's where the wounded have to go. Now we see that the wounded people are in the streets, and the soldiers are rolling over them with tanks. This happens so many times. What you see on the TV is nothing. That is just one camera. What you cannot see is so much.
While Qasim speaks of the television footage, there are also stories of soldiers not discriminating between civilians and resistance fighters. Abdul Razak Ismail just came from Fallujah 1 week ago. He is now working to help other refugees.
There are dead bodies in the ground and nobody can bury them. The Americans are dropping some of the bodies into the Euphrates near Fallujah. They are pulling the bodies with the tanks and putting them at the soccer stadium.
Another man cried for several minutes before being able to speak about what he saw. Abu Farouk told another horrendous story while tears streamed down his cheeks.
They bombed my neighborhood and we used carjacks to raise rubble to get the children out from under the concrete blocks.
Another Fallujah refugee, Abu Sabah, told of how he escaped with his family while soldiers were shooting bullets over their heads. His cousin was killed, and he just arrived in Baghdad yesterday.
They used these weird bombs that put up smoke like a mushroom cloud. Then small pieces fell from the air with long tails of smoke behind them. These exploded on the ground with large fires that burned for half an hour. They used these near the train tracks. You could hear these drop from a large airplane, and the bombs were the size of a tank. And then when anyone touched those fires, their body was burned for hours.
With the execution of an Iraqi man by a U.S. Marine documented on television, the fear of hundreds more stories like this coming out of Fallujah seems certain to materialize. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Dar Jamil with Salam Talib in Baghdad, Iraq.
This afternoon, President Bush announced the nomination of Condoleezza Rice's Secretary of State to replace Colin Powell. Selena Masuda reports from Capitol Hill.
If I am confirmed by the Senate, I look forward to working with the great people of the Foreign Service and the Civil Service.
That was Condoleezza Rice accepting her nomination for Secretary of State. Supporters like George Allen, a Virginian Republican senator, echoed the sentiment of many senators as the halls of the Senate were filled with a flurry of activity on the first day of the lame duck session.
Condoleezza Rice is one who is smart, she is poised, she is loyal to the president, she will advocate U.S. interests.
If Rice's nomination is confirmed, the National Security Advisor will replace current Secretary of State Colin Powell, who resigned on Monday. Despite the criticisms of Rice's handling of 9/11 intelligence and Iraq reconstruction, Democratic senators like Joseph Lieberman, a member of the Armed Services Committee, see little to no opposition to a Rice appointment.
I would be very surprised. I mean, I would, you know, there are always going to be questions, or ought to be. This is an important time with a lot on the line, but I think the president won the right to have the Secretary of State he wants. she's an excellent choice.
Rice is seen as someone who is loyal to Bush and the administration's policies. Accusations of the lack of loyalty to the administration's policies has been an issue that has weakened Secretary Powell and his leadership in shaping foreign policies within the administration. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, a close friend to Powell and second in charge, handed in his resignation to Secretary Powell on Monday. Some wonder why Armitage was not considered for the position of Secretary of State. However, Senator Allen has faith in the president's decision.
The president ultimately makes this decision. I support the president's decision on how he wants to align his team for foreign policy. Dick Armitage is a great individual, and none of this should be any sort of a diminishment of everyone's respect and admiration for Secretary Armitage.
6 out of 15 cabinet members have resigned. More resignations are predicted to still come. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Selena Masuda of WPFW's DC Radio Co-op.
The 108th Congress has returned for a lame duck session in which it will attempt to pass several spending bills. Today, Senate Democrats chose Senator Harry Reid from Nevada as their new leader. Reid is a moderate Democrat and opposes abortion for most cases. Reid's leadership comes as conservative religious leaders swarm the Capitol to urge the Senate Republican leadership not to appoint Senator Alan Spector to the chairship of the powerful Judiciary Committee because he's pro-choice. Our Capitol Hill correspondent Mitch Jeserich takes a look at this last session of the 108th Congress.
Holy God, we pray that you will enlighten the mind of Senator Alan Spector to see the error of his way.
Dozens of people prayed outside the Capitol asking for divine intervention to keep Republican Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania from becoming the next chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Specter, who is in line to become the next chair based on seniority, is pro-choice. With the likelihood that President Bush will nominate several people for the Supreme Court, the religious right is heralding a campaign directed at the Senate Republican leadership to choose an anti-abortion lawmaker to head the committee. Reverend Patrick Mahoney, the director of the Christian Defense Coalition, spoke outside the office of Senate Leader Bill Frist.
Pro-life, pro-family Americans spend countless hours campaigning to make a difference in this election, and we did. We did not make that sacrifice to wake up on November 3rd and realize that Arlen Specter may be the next chairperson of the Senate Judiciary.
Reportedly, Senate Republicans' offices' phone lines have been tied up with anti-abortion advocates urging lawmakers not to support Specter for the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it is having some effect. Senate Leader Bill Frist has withheld his support for Specter when appearing on Fox News Sunday. On Tuesday, Specter made his case to Frist and other high-ranking Republicans. Specter refused to answer reporters' questions about the meeting afterwards.
Well, you will not be surprised to hear that I'm not going to discuss with you what I have said within the leadership meeting. So if you'll excuse me, I think I've answered questions to a more extensive degree than comedy and courtesy require. Okay?
Do you expect this to be finished this?
In the 108th Congress, the Senate has confirmed over 90% of President Bush's judicial nominations. The Democrats were successful in stopping a handful of nominees who were staunch anti-abortionists with the use of a filibuster. With the potential Supreme Court nominees likely to come the Senate's way, the GOP leadership is exploring ways how to parliamentarily sidestep a filibuster known as a nuclear option because of the political fallout it would create, so to confirm judicial nominees by a simple majority vote. Senator Lott says he would use it.
They're going to stop this filibustering of federal judicial nominees, or we should take whatever action is necessary to put a stop to it.
On the first day of a planned week-long congressional lame duck session, Senate Democrats chose Senator Harry Reid of Nevada as their new leader, replacing Senator Tom Daschle of South Dakota, who was defeated in the general election. Reid, a devout Mormon, is considered to be a moderate Democrat who supported the Iraqi invasion and who is against abortions under most circumstances. But Reid says as leader, he'll represent the pro-choice position of his party. He also says he'll attempt to work with Republicans.
We're not going to, at this time, have any marks in the sand and say you can't step over those. We're going to simply wait and see what this administration wants to do. We're going to see if they're willing to be a uniter. We're willing, as I said earlier, to dance. We don't need to fight all the time.
But Reid warns the Republicans not to opt for the so-called nuclear option, which would take away the potential use of a filibuster in judicial nominations.
And what the majority in the Senate must understand is they will not always be in the majority, and they'd better be very, very careful.
White House spokesperson Scott McClellan told reporters on Monday that the Bush administration will continue to work to try to limit abortions.
Deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom.
But words are not enough for many of those who are praying outside the Capitol today. They say they plan to keep Bush's feet to the fire when it comes to nominate a Supreme Court justice. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News.
The Australian Parliament sat today for the first time since the Coalition government's decisive victory on October 9, and some politicians will be using this week's session as an opportunity to place abortion back on the national agenda. Women have been able to access legal abortions in Australia for the past 30 years. However, this right is being called into question following suggestions by newly elected Family First Senator Steve Fielding that there should be a national forum on the issue. The new party, Family First, reportedly has links to the Pentecostal Church, the Assemblies of God. Mr. Fielding is not alone in calling for public debate on the issue. A number of government ministers preempting Fielding's call, claiming that the state funding for abortion should be debated. Erica Voles reports from Sydney.
There's a whole new generation that hasn't been part of the debate before.
Steve Fielding, Family First Senator-elect, discussing why Australia needs a national forum on abortion.
There's two issues here. One is, when is a life a life? And secondly, are women being given, I suppose, adequate information at a time that they've got to make a very important decision? And I suppose that it's important that people have a chance to have their say.
Mr. Fielding's calls for a forum have certainly achieved one aim, by sparking debate across the country.
What do you think about calls for a national forum on abortion?
I don't really think it's necessary. I can see where it's coming from, the extreme right. It's quite worrying, and as far as I'm aware, that abortion levels have actually decreased by 20% over the last 10 years, so that I really can't see the point in it at all.
Well, I think any discussion is probably good, but I'm certainly suspicious if there's certainly an agenda that might be driving the reason why the forum will be going. So I'd want to look at the reason why the forum would be established in the first place. But discussion is always very useful.
Kate Calcutt is the coordinator of abortion counselling and advocacy group Children by Choice.
She claims that reducing Medicare funding for abortions will disadvantage low to middle income women.
We know that the small number of Australians, and it generally shows up less than about 15%, do hold particularly strong views around abortion. And that's fine. If people are anti-abortion, that is their right to hold that view. But as I said, they do not reflect the majority of this of the Australian public's views, and they do not represent those women, possibly one in three Australian women, who will need to access a termination of pregnancy in their lifetime.
A recent poll by the Australian National University backs up these claims. The poll found that only 1 in 10 Australians were opposed to giving women the right to terminations. According to Nick Economou, a senior lecturer in politics at Monash University, people should be wary of assuming that Family First Senator Steve Fielding was elected because of any large-scale constituency that holds anti-abortion views based on Christian fundamentalist values.
There's been a lot of hype, hypersensitivity about the election of Mr. Fielding. We should remember that Mr. Fielding was elected in Victoria with a primary vote of 1.9%. Very, very small. The only reason why Mr. Fielding is in the Senate is because he was the beneficiary of a big flow of Labor Party preferences. So I think that the claims that the sky is falling as a result of Mr. Fielding's election ought to be tempered with a look at the electoral reality.
Dr. Economou notes that much of the debate that is centred around Family First is also misplaced because some of the biggest opponents of abortion occupy positions of power within the government. Recently, long-term opponent of abortion, Health Minister Tony Abbott, was joined in support by a number of Liberal and National Party politicians, many of whom are opposed to abortion because of strongly held Catholic beliefs. But Dr. Economou says that these calls from within don't necessarily reflect beliefs held in the community.
The drive to reopen this issue, presumably to achieve a particular policy end, the Health Minister Tony Abbott has left people in no doubt where he stands on this issue, has actually come from within the mainstream political parties. I don't recall it being discussed during the election campaign itself. So perhaps on the basis of that, there's an argument that could be made that that whatever drives this debate at the moment, a sense of there being general community desire that this matter be revisited is largely absent.
This is Erica Voles in Sydney, reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
Weeks after year-end vacations started at schools all over Guatemala, inmates at one of Guatemala's maximum security prisons held their own graduation yesterday. One of the students who graduated elementary school, two who graduated junior high, and two of their teachers are on death row. Activists and those on death row in Guatemala hope their education program adds a new dimension to a growing death penalty debate in one of the last countries in the region that still has capital punishment. Catherine Elton attended the graduation and files this report.
In a stuffy corridor between two sets of iron bars, Gustavo Carranza hands out Ministry of Education accredited diplomas to the students he has tutored for the past 2 years. Heavily armed guards survey the crowded hallway while one inmate watches his fellow prisoners graduate through a mirror he extends through the bars of his cell. Carranza is known in Guatemala as one of the men convicted to death for an infamous kidnapping and murder of a young Guatemalan woman. But inside this maximum security facility, he's known as a man who gives selflessly of his time to run an education program where the state has failed to.
Even though I am in jail condemned to die, I have great desire to help my fellow inmates. We are demonstrating that in spite of the fact that we have been condemned to an unjust, cruel, and inhumane punishment, we have the will to learn.
Along with Cuba, Guatemala is the only Spanish-speaking country in the region that still has the death penalty. Up until 1996, death penalties were executed by firing squads. Now, lethal injection is used. No one has been executed here in over 4 years, but there are some 30 prisoners on death row. Mario Castaneda is a bus inspector and a resident of crime-ridden Guatemala City. He says he supports maintaining the death penalty.
Yo ya no salgo con confianza a la calle, pues.
When I leave my house, I don't know if I'll make it back home. If we didn't maintain it, there would be more violence. I think we should be tough on crime and maintain it.
Castaneda is not alone. Polls consistently show that the death penalty is overwhelmingly popular here. Nevertheless, there is a growing debate on the issue as human rights activists and European diplomats try to push Guatemalan leaders to abolish capital punishment. In addition to invoking the more universal reasons for abolishing the death penalty, activists in Guatemala say this fledgling democracy is no place to be handing down death sentences.
The Guatemalan justice system, not only in the cases where they condemn people to death, have loads of weaknesses in the sense that the professional level of the judges is still very weak.
Christine Svensson works for a death penalty abolition campaign at a think tank in Guatemala.
The official defense system is also weak in the sense that they lack resources, economic resources, human resources, to be able to actually proportion or give an adequate defense, technical and material defense, to every one of their clients. Loads of people have been condemned to death upon very weak proofs. Almost all the cases are based upon testimonies only. They don't have any technical proof.
Death row inmates say they hope their education program counts as good behavior when they ask for pardons or appeal their sentences. But what they say they most hope for is that people outside the jail will learn something from their education program too. 44-year-old Fermin Ramirez didn't receive a diploma yesterday. He's still working his way through elementary school after learning how to read and write in jail.
As long as we are still alive, we have hope, and we're going to use our time to study and not waste it so that society sees that we can rehabilitate ourselves here.
Ramirez says that even if he never leaves his jail and if his execution is carried out, he won't regret having learned to read. He says it will be a piece of his personal history that will live on after him, and that that idea fills him with pride. I'm Catherine Elton in the maximum security prison in Escuintla, Guatemala.
A talent show at Boulder High School in Colorado came under scrutiny by the Secret Service last week over potential threat to the president, prompting debate among students about free speech. Maeve Conran reports from Boulder.
A talent show at Boulder High School was at the center of a free speech debate last Friday when students were set to perform Bob Dylan's Masters of War, a song which criticizes guns and weapons companies. The band allegedly changed the lyrics to mention George Bush.
What's worse than one Secret Service agent? Two Secret Service agents!
Principal Cabrera was visited by two agents last Thursday after some students and their parents became concerned about the lyrics of a song due to be performed by a student rock group named the Taliban.
We did have Secret Service who came by Boulder High yesterday, and certainly they had been given some reports that lyrics of a song were threatening the president, physical harm, and they were doing their due diligence to investigate that threat.
A high school senior phoned a conservative talk radio show last Thursday, saying that the band was rehearsing the song in front of a picture of George Bush, implying a threat to the president. Listeners to the radio show called the Secret Service, which prompted two agents to visit the school. The band members deny that they had changed the lyrics of the song and do not advocate any kind of violence. The band, which had changed its name to the Coalition of the Willing, performed the song at Friday's talent show, which drew record crowds and unprecedented media attention. Although no Secret Service agents attended the show, the incident has sparked debate about free speech of students and mixing politics and education. Boulder High School was the scene of an overnight sit-in by nearly 100 students over a week ago. Principal Cabrera says that freedom of expression and thought is encouraged in the students.
I'm certainly supportive of kids who want to organize their thoughts, and they do it in a manner that's respectful.
Although the Secret Service investigation was dropped when no threat was revealed, the incident has serious implications for free speech. Catherine Hazuri of the Colorado chapter of the ACLU.
I think that it makes people afraid. It makes people cautious about what they're willing to say. And that is not free speech.
For Free Speech Radio News in Boulder, Colorado, this is Maeve Conran.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.